52 minutes, but welcome. It seems to be very important to shape type and characteristic acts, but I'm sure we can get started now. Welcome to you, Deputy Minister, and your delegation from the department, as well as the leadership of the Minister of Africa. Not going to be a boxing match. It's going to be a very simple exchange of information. As always, we merely seek to ensure that our reporting to Parliament should be properly done by having certain grey areas clear so that we have proper context of what killed the patient. So that is our work for the moment. So it is just that. And I think we have every intention to have an early morning. So the more forthright and pointed responses, the easier and the better for all of us. I want to assure you that we want to have an early morning. So if we're going to stay here longer, it will certainly depend on this side of the house. Otherwise, from this side, we have every intention to keep it as short as possible. We have not had a very good interaction with I want to say a problem child, but a child with a problem, both things are not good. And we hope that our interaction today does not become one of those engagements, but we seek to say where do we draw the line so that there is forward movement. But of course, there are some issues pertaining to the department itself that we would like to change. I must stress, however, that we are not oblivious to the good work that has been done in the department. We have entitled the department before with the audit outcomes that were not good. As it is right now, I think for the last 2 years running, the department has had an unqualified audit. So we want to start from the underline. But however, to say there is room for improvement. So what we'll do, Minister, we'll hand over to your side to introduce yourself and the National Treasurer as well, the office and the Member of Parliament, and then we can engage from
them. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. Present, just at the outset, thank you for welcoming us to this this meeting, Honourable Chair. We would like to just report once again the apologies of our Minister Mbalula. As you know, he's in a cabinet meeting dealing with precisely a matter of national and international importance for sport this morning at cabinet level, so that is precisely why he's unable to be here. My name is Gert Oosthuizen, Deputy Minister of Sport. I have next to me Mr. Alec Mohemi, the Director General of our department, and perhaps with your permission, DG, let the Chair, let the DG take over from here. Safe to say for me, we have the newly appointed Chairperson of Boxing South Africa, the Honourable Nonde Balfour. We are putting him through a school now to understand sport. He's never been exposed to sport. We are teaching him now, but He's the chair of the new boxing board, so we say welcome to him. But if you have your permission, the DJ can take the team of sport and recreation, introduce them, and then I'm not too sure they want us to then really start the process at that point. Thank you, DJ.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Alec Moemi. I'm the Director General for Sports and Recreation South Africa.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Makoto Matala, CFO for Sports and Recreation.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Makonola Hansel Mulemoye. I'm the Chairperson of the Committee of Sports and Recreation.
Members, my name is Mwande Balfa. I'm the chairperson of Boxing South Africa.
Other officials?
Sorry, good morning, Chairperson and members of Honorable Members. My name is Justin Yolindi. I'm with the Ministry of Sport.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm the Cook Private Sector.
Morning, my name is Tanya Lopunduli, Head of Communications at TTIF. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tawadu Makemi. I'm the Manager of the Government.
Morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Baina Halane. I'm the Media Liaison Officer in the Ministry.
Good morning, I'm
Rebecca Vaskafni
from National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Diazne, Parliamentary Officer of the Dominica.
Thanks. Can we also go to the AG request that members switch off their cell phones? That is members of the panel. Please take a hold of that on. One ring, even if it's on silent, cancel all the recording that was taking place at that time. So please just switch off your phone for now.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Barry Wheeler from the Office of Auditor General.
Honourable Chair and Members, my name is Musa Shambwa from the Auditor General, responsible for the audit of Sports and Recreation and also for Boxing FM.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair and the members. I am Gatok Sang. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, members. My name is Adele Chiwan. I'm the member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm a member of the committee.
Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister and officials, my name is Pierre Rabi and I'm a member of this committee.
Right. Thank you very much. Comrade Temba Kuti, I chair the committee. Well, we'll start with the department. I said that we are happy that it went for the last 3 years of that is an unqualified audit. And we'd like to keep it that way. Let me hand over to Comrade Tobidan to keep track of the
you are going to do it to convince the deputy minister, I'm sure as the engagement speaks, there are issues that they want to talk to at the end of the session. You can move them down. But in the course of the engagement, you agree to also engage in terms of giving further explanation to any of the issues that might be raised. At the end, there will be some 2-3-4 minutes to talk to any issue that you may want to talk to, arising out of the engagement. Yes, Kumbis.
Chairperson, as an area that that I'll be dealing with runs from regular fruitless to wasteful expenditure, and then followed by compliance with laws and regulations, and lastly financial and performance management. Chair, I would want to hear from the DG as to how do you manage a department that does not comply with law, in particular supply chain management, that has been seen plotted and leading to irregular expenditure for the 2 consecutive years, including the one we are talking about. If you were to tell us why Section 44 of the PFMA was not complied with, I think you may have the proceeding. It's me who is chairing the session now.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I assume that you would. No. Yes, please do come.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Hosi Tambra Utorezan, the issues pertaining to compliance with the regular laws and what is prescribed in terms of the PFMA and other laws of the Republic, which a department such as ours has got to comply with, are issues that have come before us, and we have noted all the findings of the AG. We instituted an action plan to seek to address some of the shortcomings that were highlighted here, and also to take remedial action against both systematic in terms of the challenges that were embedded within the operations of the department, but also to deal with the relevant personnel who were involved in the shortcomings. Now, if I may go to a bit of detail in this regard, let me start first with the systematic challenges that the department had and which is what we are seeking to address. First and foremost, the manner in which the department was structured, particularly around the issues of contracting, and if you refer to Section 44 of the PFMA specifically, you would note that we had a section called auxiliary services within the department, which also was given financial delegation to be able to contract certain services. And you also had a section called supply chain, which also was given financial delegations to also contract and to procure certain services and goods. Consequently, this scenario has led to an untenable situation, where when an instruction is issued in terms of a delegation to a management committee meeting, it may be misinterpreted as to which section then contacts what and to what extent. And where there is a bit of ambiguity, we have had challenges where both sections have sometimes even double booked for the same service. And this was picked up. Already at the point of remedy, we have begun to rationalize this section. We have transferred at the start some of the functions of auxiliary services to supply chain. We're in the process of basically restructuring the entire department, and in the process we'll also close up the auxiliary services completely and have only one section entitled to do procurement as well as contracting.
I think this is, you have done well, you have put me in a better position to understand. But what remains to convince, if these things happen, you know what were the cause. But what remains is what happened to these people who deliberately contravening the law, because you are correctly stipulating what they were expected to be done. What happened to them? Who are they? Are they still sitting around you and they are continuing with this mismanagement of the resources of the department?
Honorable member, there's a lot the department has done in this regard. I think we had charged most of the people who were involved. Some were suspended. Some cases have already been finalized, and I think up to now we're
just saying more.
Because others are subject here to investigation, and I can tell you a few cases that remain outstanding in terms of that. In this regard. But to start with, and I will explain a few cases that remain outstanding. But in this regard, most cases have been finalized. We have already dismissed about 6 employees in this regard. We have also gone further in terms of Combating of Corruption Act, the requirements there too. We have reported the matter to SAPS as is required by law, particularly where fraud is among that. And we have the statement and the case number which we can hand in to the committee in respect of the employees involved.
I think they are giving me a better day. It's a therapy to me to hear that there are people who are implementing the law, because I'm sure you are one among the few departments who are able and capable to implement this particular document. Many of you just see them there. We are not sure what to do, and the fact that there are court cases, there are dismissals, there are investigation. I think I'm satisfied on this particular one. I want to move to the next question then. The next question, Chair, is very direct. When you are having officials, important people to do the important work of the department, it cannot take, the effective and efficient of the department. How do you arrive at double book people in our desk? I'm by myself, but you book me 3 times or 4 times. At some stage you book me, I don't go, and you keep on, paying yourself. How do you manage this scenario, the city where you are?
Honorable Talazan, it hasn't exactly happened as you put it. The information before me and what I read from the management letter and the AG's report, as well as the disclosure notes, indicated that the double booking we are talking about is in respect of the IKAYA program and the Olympics in Beijing. And at that stage, the instruction by the then DG, Sibeko, was that a venue needed to be booked for purposes of this, and there was an agreement reached with the various departments who were involved in support and the delivery of the Olympics. And the Sports and Recreation Assembly Department was to then higher accommodation, which would be sufficient for the entire government delegation, including people from other departments. and there was an expectation that there would be an interdepartmental transfer and interdepartmental claim in respect of the use of the rooms. So basically, Sports and Recreation was to play an agent of other departments in this regard, to have a more consolidated, with a view of bulk buying, to get a better rate for the many rooms that we can buy and book in bulk. So unfortunately, it is said that at the time, that same hotel, because we couldn't book the whole of it, the other countries also booked there. One of the countries that booked and booked almost four floors of the entire hotel was the USA. And with their security measures and everything, they basically rendered the whole issue of IKAYA ineffective, because their security measures required that everyone entering the hotel be screened, and everybody who was to go within the parameter of the hotel needed to be cleared. And an IKAYA is an open concept on which South Africans living abroad feel free to come and interact with ATLAS and to lend their support and everything to such a program. So consequently, for the hassles that were there, and for the many ministers of the other departments, felt that they would not be subjected to such, and they opted to book themselves elsewhere. And that left an egg on the face of Sports and Recreation, in the sense that there wasn't a written agreement to enforce with those departments. And consequently, I am pleased that
I felt almost interjected you when you, in the beginning, when you said there was an expectation. It immediately clears in me that there was no agreement.
Yes.
Because that's an expectation.
The agreement was verbal, I'm told. And consequently, as a result of that, the former minister had charged, Minister Makenge Bistofile had charged the DG, Ms. Sibeko, in respect of that matter. And when the wisdom of the president then decided to swap the DGs and send Ms. Sibeko to Correctional Services and bring Vinnie Peterson to Sports and Recreation, at that point, we did what we are required to do in terms of the public service regulations, and we handed the case over to Correctional Services, which has now become the new employer, to Ms. Sibeko to pursue the case. And it was at that point that it got out of our hands to handle that. But this is really the story behind the booking of the hotel in Beijing, which led to a lesson.
In terms of intergovernmental arrangement, when you floor crossing from, you know, export to correctional service, is there any question?
Please, let's continue. Floor crossing is a stress.
Well, I'm saying intergovernmental floor crossing. It's only parliamentarian floor crossing that is not exist, but government is still there. So I wanted to check as to what arrangement in terms of intergovernmental, when somebody is moving with a package of, you know, issues to be answered, is there any arrangement to say the other sister department can pursue on your behalf once you have given them, you know, internal whatever?
In fact, yes, the obligation rests now. Once we hand over to the next government department, the obligation rests with the department to investigate and to pursue that, or to carry on with the case as may be. But you would appreciate that at the time, the delegations of appointing DGs was not given to ministers. The DGs were still appointed by the country's president. And as a person who appoints, that person is the one whose power rests with him to determine whether to discipline an employee, to charge an employee, or to pursue the matter. And at that point, even when the floor crossing, as you put it, happened, the indication was made in sent to the presidency that there was this outstanding matter and that needed to be dealt with. And when I became DG, we also made a follow-up to find out what has happened with the case. And the response from Correctional Services was simply that Ms. Ibeko didn't stay long enough with them, and there were other issues, and she's no longer in the employ of the public service. And consequently, there was also an indication that there was an unwillingness from the president to charge, to give directives that the matter go further.
So when the former DG was in Sports and Culture, Sports and Recreation, she was charged by the president, or was charged by the minister?
She was charged by the minister, and she was challenging that the minister has no power to charge her as she was appointed by the president. So there was this thing in limbo for some time that needed clarification, and then due to
why should there be a limbo? I suppose there is a legal statement. Why should that be an issue in terms of legal clarification?
In fact, the minister ultimately dismissed her, said she was dismissed, and it was because of that in what was perceived as infighting.
So when she was moved to correctional service, she was dismissed?
According to the minister. But you see, this is what I'm saying, that legally speaking, the person who has the power to hire is the same person who has the power to fire. So if that power is not delegated.
So how then did the minister seek to discipline her when not a thing, even for a layman like me, it should be obvious that if such a thing is correct, you wouldn't be able to.
Chair, that situation, I think, as Parliament may appreciate, was a very untenable situation where DGs are appointed by the president, but they are expected to account to the minister. So from reporting point of view, you are accountable to this person, and you have to answer to this person. But when there is a dispute or you decide to charge or discipline a person, you now have to look elsewhere for that purpose. So I think it created an untenable situation, and it was this doubt that was being used to challenge that. And this one thing, I am briefed that at the time the former president decided on that note in resolving the impasse.
So it was not
to transfer.
So it was not essentially that the issue was out of her head when she was transferred to correctional services, and that anyway it was out of the rest for the minister to export to the
world. I would not be able to determine the frame of mind of the minister then. And
no, I'm talking legal. Well, so it was literally outside his power.
Maybe the matter at hand here, we may be approaching it from a wrong angle, because the Constitution of the Republic said the cabinet, individually and collectively, they are accountable, and the reason why there is some kind of relation to minister, despite the fact that minister is not appointed, it was based on that. Therefore, we should not question things that are very straightforward in terms of law. So I thought they were doing very well. What we may need to do is to get an update vision to whoever, whether it's the president's office or correctional service, as to there is this person who left with an egg on the face from, you know, sports and recreation. What happened? Where is that person? How the matter was concluded? And the fact that an attempt by the minister, correctly so, in terms of the constitution, to say individually and collectively manage the cabinet, he was very right to act in that particular way. Of course, the final decision would then taken at that collective level. So I thought. Let's find a way as to how do we get to the logical conclusion of the case. We may decide whether we get that status from the president or the correctional service, whatever way the chair would want to do. I think it will make sense to me. I'm giving you for your ruling as to how, which best route should we follow.
I'm still thinking.
Thank you. And I think I want to agree with you. it guarantees that we are going to have an early morning, unless they are spoken in South Africa, cause us to have a delay. But with the department, it gets guaranteed. Compliance, of course, the strategic planning is easy. You know, there are procedures that are laid down that they should be followed when we are dealing with the strategic planning prior to the approval. But the final analysis is that the strategic planning should be approved. In your regard, in that particular under review here, nothing was done in terms of approval. What was the cause for not approving, you know, the strategic planning that were in place as we are talking?
I believe that the strategic plans were approved. I think the key issue was the late submission of the provincial strategic plans, on which 50% of the conditional grant or 50% of our budget is given to them as a conditional grant. I don't think that on the part of the department, the information contained in the notes and everything indicates that indeed the departmental strategic plan was done timely and approved properly as is required by law. But the
maybe I should give you to where if you look at section 20 of phase 1, several 1 of the AG's report, the last word there is saying, as there were several policies and procedures that were not approved. So I wanted you to deal with that one.
Yes, that helps me understand better, Honorable Member, because what is being referred to is not the strategic plan, but necessarily the policies as well as the procedures of the department. And some were approved, some were not. I think the key issue is that the policies were drafted, written, and in terms of the process, they have to go up until the ministry for approval. And sometimes it took much longer for the ministry to come back. By the time the audit was conducted, some of these policies remained unsigned. There was an issue which we sought to deal with once and for all and to clarify whether indeed departmental policies, as are those that do not necessarily affect the constitutional powers of the minister, but have to do with the efficient running of the department, or to be in the first place approved by the minister, or should they be approved by the DG. And the position really, I think, even in terms of standard practice, is that the policies ought to be approved by the DG and not necessarily by the minister. It is those that have specific delegations which are powers of the minister constitutionally, but which needs to be operationalized, that must be done. So we have since remedied the situation and have approved. I have now signed all the policies of the department.
You see, the good part is when you are sitting in your office, you are doing very well, I must say. But you were not doing well every year under review. That's the reason why we are sitting here. If we were to deal with things you are doing now, we wouldn't have any problem. We were going to say, fast, you can go. But you are saying, at that time, why were they not being approved, these policies and procedures, as laid down, you know, to give guidance as to how do you process, you know, strategic planning documents?
Hey, Chair, for the first time I feel like Jesus. But the truth is that I may not really know the answer fully to why then it took longer to have the minister to sign the documents. But the good thing is that as soon as we reviewed the management letter and the key issues that were before us, we thought in terms of the action plan that we have took and put in place to address most of the shortcomings addressed, and we immediately with the relevant authorities, with Treasury and with the
General, is it, Comrade Deputy Minister, is it usual, I mean, your turnaround time, generally in the ministry, if there are documentation and communication with the department, we what is our turnaround time? Do we usually have delays? What will be the cause of delays? Because from what the DG says, it's not that police are not there, but the process leading up to finalization of approval has been delayed. Taking this specific example and looking at it generally, what are our turnaround times generally? And what will be the basis for delay?
Honourable Chairperson, there may be various reasons for a delay. The normal turnaround time is like between 2 to 3 working days to have things done. I can only assume, I repeat, honourable members, I can only assume that the minister at the time were applying his mind to certain of the policies, because we must also understand at that time we had a period where we didn't have a director general, we had an acting director general, then we had Mr. Deku coming in, we had the transfer of Mr. Deku, the new DG settling in. So I assume that there was no other reason, no malice, no nothing. It was just to stabilize the department. May I just also ask the Honourable Committee to bear in mind, it was also in the time that we, since 2004, started implementing a task team report to have a departmental support from a directorate to close down certain entities and to dedicate to the position where we have a department, and also focusing on other more important matters, such as hosting the World Cup, preparing for that. I can only assume, Honourable Chair, that the minister at the time, as a member of the local organizing committee, charged specifically with the responsibility to deliver on that World Cup guarantee, the World Cup guarantees, member of that, was consumed in time there, partly, but otherwise applying his mind to the policies so that we adhere to the policies. That's the only explanation I can give.
But does it happen that when communication has been sent to the ministry and there are delays for whatever reason, there is communication that this is going to be delayed for such and such a reason, or the department being able to inquire in terms of this communication has been sent or not received any feedback? Is there anything, or it is only a one-way problem? Only the ministry can hold back and say, we are delayed. I'm raising this in the context of the Auditor General will come and say, we are looking for ABCD, and they will say, well, we'll send them to the ministry. But then be unable to have a sense of by when this feedback will be given, or even to have an explanation on why these things are outstanding. I'd like to hear from the Deputy Minister first.
Honourable Chairperson, I think the DG tried to, in his answer, explain partly that it has to do with delegations and who signs it where. If I understood you correctly,
maybe let me be more direct. Can DG phone your office and say, we've sent you a document last week, we have not received the report,
yes,
or are they not allowed to phone you and say, I've sent a document? What I'm trying to find.
No, sir, they can phone us, and they do that, even on the mobile phone, not necessarily even to the office. They can do that. They have all the right to do that, and they are doing that to meet the deadlines. And what I'm trying to get across, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is it may be at the time that some of the policies were sent back for alterations or for amendments. I'm not empowered to answer that because I wasn't part of that, although I was Deputy Minister. But surely the answer I can give is what we know at the time. There was no malice, you know.
Okay. No, that's fine. Because the important element to this is that the it cannot and does not have to be sent to the ministry, and it's like there is no linkage. They've been sent there, if they don't respond, where they did not respond, if they responded, where they respond. I think that's the point. And worse still, because you are not the minister, you are not the DG. So we are going to deal with this issue in the realm of speculation, in terms of what might or might not have happened. So unless you want to say something, DG, I would like us to step up.
No, I think to be fair to the ministry, we are talking only two policies out of the many, and the other key thing is...
I think it doesn't matter whether there are two or ten.
I want to highlight some important aspects which must also be brought before the committee to consider in making a decision. There's other policies that we ourselves alone can finalize. One of them, which was also highlighted, was the HR plan that we required to have. We require DPSA to actually endorse the plan. And you can appreciate, even up to now, we have submitted this plan to them. There's been more than 8 months, and they are nowhere near to giving us a response whether they are accepting the plan or they are not accepting it, and we remain in limbo. And often on a number of things, including on issues that have to do with ministerial handbook, where we want clarification so we can fine-tune and craft our own policies and make proper decisions in terms of what really the interpretation is. You don't get the type of feedback you need and support from those departments as quick as we would require and as quick as we would. And that now, you would also see that even in the current audit, it will return saying that there is no HR plan in place, because we can't say that because we have written it and we have long submitted it, it means that it's there. As long as it's not yet approved by DPSA, it will return saying it is not there.
But at least you'll be able to say, I submitted 8 months ago.
Yes.
Then we can pin it down and say, this is where the problem is. This is what's wrong. Then we can go to DPSA and say, why are we taking it so long?
I think that's where I am. We mustn't find a problem that is sort of bottled. We don't know how to get out of it or where to go. What exactly was the issue? I think that was the point. Yes, Bush.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe on that point, realizing that in many instances we are dealing with issues relating to non-compliance of laws and regulations, it might become something that as a committee we need to consider, Chairperson, to do it like we are doing with Treasury, that in every city, Department of Public Administration and more. That is fitting, you know, with us, so that when we deal with non-compliance of laws and what have you, they are there and there jump into like the treasury. So, but I'm saying the committee should look into that, because the reasons that they are forwarding to us, they are saying to us they are frustrated by the sister department, which is part of government, where as an oversight structure, we need to look at that as to how do we also assist the frustrating of processing things that are required not to affect the audit outcome of the department. I'm sure on the section 21 of chapter 111 again, I wanted to check whether at that particular time in your own understanding, will you then say there were systems and then the own bodies who were responsible to do the work? Because up until the AD determined and find this misstatement of identification that was identified by AD, issues of assets, expenditure, and what. They were not correctly, accounted until they were identified by the AG. Wow. Can you then say maybe it would have been improper that unit was supposed to be outsourced to the AG and you just get salary for doing nothing, because they come and said, but what's wrong here? Then you start to say, oh, okay, and that's correct. But why were you then sitting there and getting salary, Deputy Minister? Because these people, they were getting salary.
but not doing what they expected, up until somebody who was, you know, coming from outside said, hey, what's this? Then they start correcting when only, you know, they themselves come in. I wanted to get your view. Will you say they were a department? And if the department was on leave at that time, why do we not have to get our money back that we have paid them during that particular period where the work has to be done by ATFS? Honorable member, I think the key issue really about this issue of material misstatements in the annual financial statement has to do with the interpretation of the policies of the department. But if you take, for instance, the accruals, how you record them, and whether you record them on the basis of the AG's practice notes and as well as the financial reporting framework, or you record them based on what you have before you. And it was recognized that some of our policies were not fully compliant with the law, and that is why these laws have got to be changed in this regard. And we have, on this basis, we have an internal audit unit which is functional with an audit committee which now regularly reviews.
Currently?
Yes.
I know sometimes I must say it, I'm not interested in the currency matter. And the portfolio committee will deal with that one. I want to know why things happen the way they happen. That's where I am.
Well, the truth of the matter is that it is quite difficult for me. When I come in, I have two choices. Either I could look backwards and say, let me institute forensic investigations against everyone and place almost half of the department under investigations to look at what happened previously, or I could say this is the situation I inherit now, and these are the challenges that are here, and I believe that's why I'm hired, so I could correct most of the things that are wrong, and have a forward-looking approach that says, how do I go forward with what I have, and how do I improve the systems and everything. So I chose, instead of putting the entire department under limbo and under half of it under investigation for one thing or the other, because it will not just be around this issue, it will be on everything, on what happened previous, wrongly taken decisions and every other thing. Or I could choose a forward-looking approach, and I chose to look forward.
Don't you think that you had no choice? Both routes must be, you know, taken on board. You should correct what happened yesterday and move forward, of course, at the same time. Therefore, for you to say you only favor looking forward, it's a deviation. And you one way or another, you may become, negligently, because you will see that these people were supposed to do things this way. I'm aware of that, but I'm afraid I'm going to finish everybody. Finish them. Because you are not finishing them, you know, by just waking up. You use the law. This is the law passed by Parliament. If the law gives you, you know, the finity, why don't you use the law? If it means let them all go, let them go. Get, you know, proper people to run the department. We should not be seen, you know, saying, hey, no, it's going to be too much. Your responsibility is to implement the law, not to rewrite the law. It's because rewriting, what's the use then of having annual report? Why do we have to talk to them? Because talking to them is to say, look at where we are coming from, correct what it was, you know, not supposed to be where they are.
Chair, let's continue. So you are giving us life. Because we are here. Said at the beginning, we do perform what kills the patient. So if that is not of interest to the department, then it means we become irrelevant as a committee. So I'm just saying. And you speak to the minister, what please talk to and understand that it is critical. Talk to the challenge and the question of stability within the department. Ensuring that with personnel that is there for a long haul. Because if the then DG was sitting here, it would be very appropriate to say, what was going through your mind when you took this particular decision? And then we're able to get an answer. But if that person is not there, we have a new person. It might be very difficult to seek to justify why certain things were done that way, or what were the material conditions that were done. So, I don't know, this department has had how many DGs in 5 years? 2, 3, 4? 4, 5 years. How do you build an institution? How do you build an organizational culture? That kind of situation. And since January, almost all, except health, almost, no, including health, all the departments that we've had here in Greece, one department had an acting TG who has been there for 2 weeks before coming to us. The other one has been there 2 months or so. And in almost all instances, because we're looking backwards, not that we fall. We hit a brick wall. Why did this thing happen? But this thing is a clear contravention of the law. Why was it allowed to happen? Well, I was not there. I'm having a turnaround plan. I'm going to fix it. Under my watch, this thing will happen. And you know, 9 months down the line, that same person won't be there. Somebody else will come. And then it becomes a... So what are we doing? Just wasting time pretending to be game oversight.
Thank you, Chester. Maybe for interest sake, when were you in place?
I started on the 1st of November last year.
Oh. You don't even have a hand on this thing that you're doing. You're accounting because liability and otherwise inheriting them in any way. That's the loss of South Africa. That's a unfortunate part. The last part, which I get, it's insensitive in another department. the last question, Chair, I'm not sure whether the investigation covered that last question, because it does spoke about the procurement failures where proper procedures were not followed of obtaining the necessary quotations, advertising for 21 days, making sure that at a particular level you obtain. Is it form part of what you are saying? It's investigation for corruption, nepotism, and what have you, so that we can cut it short. I'm very jealous of time. If it's form part of that, I can pause here there and there. Is it correct?
Yes.
Thank you very much. I'm covered.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've raised my hand for you to say everyone needs to follow up. it's a follow up on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the one that it has incurred due to the booking of the hotel, the 7.2 million. The DG, while explaining, you said the DG responsible for that is no more in the employ of the public service. But I just want to get a clarity, DG, in terms of are there any means where the department is trying to recoup this money? And that it was only the former DG who was involved in this one, who has since left the department, or are there any other officials who were forming part this fruitless and wasteful expenditure?
said, because the DG said some of the reasons it was because people were regarded into become to be searched, hence they decided to go and look somewhere. But I just wanted to check the whole contingent which was supposed to sleep in that particular hotel. They just felt the very same way and decided to go and sleep in another hotel. Thank you, Chief.
Well, let me start by indicating that the 7.2 million on food less and restful expenditure is divided into two transactions. The Beijing one being the 1.5 million. And the 2.2 million relates to the National Schools Athletics Competition, which was held at the Kugule, so which I can explain to the committee. But let me deal with the issue of the 5 million. For the hotel booking in Beijing. It is not everybody who did not stay there. I think what was disclosed was on the full cost of the stay was 5 million. However, you would also note that the officials of the Department of Sport and Recreation did utilize the hotel. The only thing remains that there were many other rooms that were unutilized at that hotel, which led to the food less and less food expenditure in it. So, yes, the accounting officer from DG had to take responsibility for the ultimate food less and less food expenditure. And I think it is what I had earlier explained in respect of this. The difficulty with this issue is that, like I said, when we handed over to correctional services, disciplinary action has to be taken consequence of that, and all attempts to recover should have been done by our sister department. Now, where we are standing, we had a debt on our hands which needed to be paid because that company would not care that it's an internal process and so on, would demand its money. And instead of perpetuating the problem, we would also have to pay interest and legal costs of recovery, and so we pay the debt and we seek to deal with the matter. But with all the limitations I've already explained, the position of the department vis-à-vis the action that needed to be taken and so on, it virtually hamstrung our ability to do any other thing we said. And I think this was the most unfortunate part about this matter. This matter now, the challenge, Chair, is that it has somewhat reached the period of prescription. It's now way beyond the required time to bring any civil action in this regard. We should have brought the civil action within the reasonable period, but then the decision should have been taken at that stage to act. But that decision was not taken.
Chair, for the matter of interest, did you mention something like the other money part of the agreement? If maybe you can get just an explanation of that.
Chair, the issue for the 2.2 million, this is a tournament that was to be held, and this is what I explained when I started about the two sections. It is sad, and this is very unfair because the late DG, Denis Peterson, is no longer here to answer for himself. But it is sad that when an instruction was issued in a management meeting to say we are proceeding with the SOBUK, so Villar Services went ahead and booked the venue, whereas supply chain also went through and booked the venue. So you had a double booking done by two sections. And the commitment was done, and both in terms of the financial delegations that were there had the power to do such a thing, and so on. And you then had two venues, and we could only use one for the event. And the other venue then had to be paid for not being used as a consequence of that. So now the former DG has passed on it. He can't respond for himself, and no one can say veracity of what is being said, so that it remains that the department that had to use another. So when I heard the story, immediately I said we have to withdraw all financial delegations, which is what I have done. And we also said we have to start transferring some of the key powers of contracting from auxiliary services to supply chain. And we have only one central fund of procurement and contracting, so that we can prevent this type of thing occurring in the south.
This is Patrick Tower, but I want to ask this question to the teacher. Because I'm giving an example. But you people were booking those people where the Americans wanted to go, where they already booked the four floors that you're talking about. No, I'm still coming. And then when our ministers said that they were going to be safe in that hotel, as we are saying, they said, no, we are not going there. We don't want to be safe. We are going to another hotel. At that moment, why didn't the department phone the hotel and say that we are cancelling this, instead of really the hotel charging you for the room? They would have just raised you instead and say, okay, we are punishing them. Let's take 10% from this. Why was that not done at that moment? And I don't know if I hit me when you said the devil was cut out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
No. Before the devil could even be transferred, as you say, that the president was the one who transferred the devil to correctional services. Was it not possible for you people to charge him and say the department wants that money back? And for the people who were dismissed, the six that you say were dismissed, what is it that they did for them to be dismissed? And if it's money problem, how are we going to recover this money, or we did recover them? Thank you.
This honorable member said, when the decision to book the hotel was made, the Americans, we don't know whether they had already booked or not booked. We don't know, because the hotels, what they signed with the Americans and with the similar countries which are considered high risk, they are not supposed to disclose. So it was only almost just before the tournament started that it was known that we will be sharing the hotel with these other countries, and these are now the stringent measures that are being introduced and every other thing, which basically renders the whole concept of the Nikaya.
No. I think that point is really
okay.
Right. Let's talk to the calculation. Was their calculation made, or is this 5 million the 10% of the overall charge?
Yeah, because we are talking with a hotel in a foreign country, in this case, you are required to make a certain deposit in advance, and then thereafter, you have a period upon which, if you cancel at that point, there is a penalty. If you cancel within this point, there is a penalty. And the higher, the closer you get, the more penalties it is. And at a certain cutoff date, if you go beyond that cutoff date without canceling, you are liable for a full cost. And I think at the time the decision, the information came forward to the department to say there is this situation which you are now going to contend with. It was way beyond the cutoff date, so it did not matter whether you cancel or you don't. You were still liable to pay for everything. Then the issue of the people who have been charged and who have been dismissed, and in whose names police investigations have been opened, you said you want to know who they are. Okay. I will explain. In terms of the founding affidavit we sent to the police, we conducted, after a presidential hotline complaint, we conducted an investigation, and even after some of the findings of the AG, and a forensic investigation was undertaken by Ernst & Young. From the Ernst & Young forensic investigation, which involved the imaging of the hardware and the databases and everything of the department and the emails and all, even including documents that were deleted before. We demanded that there were few employees who were colluding with issues pertaining to the quotations and all that, and they were manipulating the procurement process in their favor. And consequent to this, there was procurement fraud that took place, and also corruption that took place. We decided to charge. It took much longer for the matter to be brought to finality, but ultimately we decided to charge some employees, six of them, and others immediately upon knowing the notification to be charged resigned. One in fact resigned immediately when the forensic investigation commenced, when the hardware and everything was finished, she turned up their resignation. The others decided they found jobs. One found a job elsewhere, but we recorded on person and we informed the receiving department that this employee is living under a cloud and is under investigation, and that we will proceed with the investigation. And because that employee no longer works for us, works for another department of cooperative governance, we have reported the matter to the police to take up the case. That department also has an obligation to continue with that based on our report to decide whether to charge or not to charge. So the others have been dismissed outrightly based on this. So you have one case still going on. There's one employee who decided she's going to break the dead weather and she will go through with the case. The case is now continuing, and she's going through that. I'm worried, ma'am, that because these cases are now before police, perhaps I should not say the names on camera, but I will hand over this founding affidavit with the case number to the chair. We can share with members. But we would jeopardize the case greatly if I mention people's names now. All right.
Chatterton, this is on the matter of the transfer of funds or conditional grants. If you check page 112 on the report of the Auditor General, item number 82, especially if you check item number 81 on the conditional grant framework for provinces, whereby provinces are required to submit business plans for the provinces to be approved by the head of department of the provinces. If a matter, Chair, I'm raising this because it's a matter that we have raised. You remember when we had in 2009, the department, we have raised the same matter. Even now, still on coming to here. We just wanted to check because by then we were promised that the department is going to have someone who's responsible to check on whether things are being done properly. Because most of the problem, the challenge that we have in terms of the problem is that you transfer grants and those grants are used for some other purposes, of which conditional grants, in terms of the law, you have to stick to that particular intended for. So I'm just raising check on whether, since now it is appearing, it seems as if there's no improvement in terms of how do we handle conditional grants. If we can get an explanation. Thank you.
Chair, I want to fully acknowledge that the issue of the conditional grants has been a big challenge. And I'm sure even when this audit, the current one, is complete, you will see that it is still a challenge. We have in this regard decided to totally overhaul the conditional grant system, because first and foremost, our assessment is that it is not achieving the desired objective. And it is true, open-ended, that provincial accounting officers or provincial accounting officers in departments of sport have the leeway to do as they please, so to say. And it is not properly structured in such a manner that it will help us achieve the desired objectives of the current sports plan. So we have decided to take a leap of faith. We could have easily rushed to meet the deadline of the 15th March to face, bring up business plans quickly and just do it for the sake of compliance, and still not at the end of the year in the desired results and still stick with the same challenges. So we have requested that of the National Treasury to allow us and grant us extension to finalize proper business plans in line with the new framework, which we had the Lokota as well as the MINMAC to discuss. There were a few provinces that had a problem with some elements and aspects of the new framework. The new framework has been fully tightened. We have really locked assets and funds for specific purposes and for specific programs. And we have now even developed reporting templates for all provinces to be able to report back. So, like I'm saying, the delay was with a few provinces that were fighting. The key issue in terms of the dispute in that respect was the issue around procurement, because we felt that we could predetermine funds, we could have one transversal contract with Treasury that could assist us with better procurement, better value for money, and everything, and also to combat corruption, because basically, currently what provinces are procuring is not really helping us. We pay three times for the price of a ball than what you buy at Macro or at Game or wherever, and it doesn't make sense. As government with such a huge buying power, we should actually be buying it for less. But right now, we're not benefiting from economies of scale, and these three provinces were insisting that they have signed agreements with other people for 3 years and what, and they want to perpetuate with that. And so we have reached a deadlock. And for some time, we didn't have the requisite support from the Treasury in enforcing this thing. But ultimately, Treasury has accepted the wisdom of what we were trying to do and has supported us. The new framework has now been gazetted. Now, provinces are supposed to submit business plans according to this new framework. By last week, eight of these provinces have submitted, and we are reviewing those eight. There's just one province still refusing to submit. And our view is simple, is that if it does not submit, it's a free state. Our view is simple. If they do not submit the documentation, there will be no transfer to them. So we are steadfast about that issue, and we would not back down. We are convinced about the appropriateness of what we are doing, and for the support of the Minister and Deputy Minister. So when you see next financial year that we did not comply with the deadline of 2015.
We appreciate the fact that, you know, it's supposed to be very normal and obvious. But I think we've come to allow certain practices that make doing normal things seem to be extraordinary. The conditional grant, their condition, the middle condition, not getting. And I suppose part of the issues that the Commission is raising were issues around accountability. I think she remembered it quickly, because yesterday we were dealing with one report, one department, where the conditional class. And here it is, 34.34. Three provinces did not surrender their unspent funds. So the funds are spent, but did not surrender the funds. Let alone funds given and not used for the purposes for which they have been sent. It's a vexing issue. Because I see that the department transfers almost a division. And what is the level of accountability? What is the quality of the accountability? The quarterly and monthly report, are they verifiable? And are they making a difference? I think you're saying they are not. Of course, we see, I'm sure Bafana is a beneficiary. No, they are not. The Olympic team, I'm sure they are beneficiaries of the transfer. And but whoever, whether it's the Olympic team or Fana Wafana or Springboks or whatever, fact of the matter is, whether it's municipality or whatever, fact of the matter is, it has to be that is the sole point for us, because almost all departments that transferred money to COVID are not getting any joy in terms of so I think it's something that I hope as a committee will need to look at it beyond the department. But maybe lastly, DJ, and I may need to check with the internal audit and the audit committee. But if you look at the issues around procurement, the supply chain management, the regular expenditure, the AG based these things were a result of the adequate process and procedure to identify. Inadequate processes and procedures to identify irregular expenditure. In respect of the 2 million, in respect of the 582,000, in respect of the 188,000. I'm interested to find out. And you can see that in all these amounts, the bigger chunk of these amounts were actually identified to the audit. Which means without external audit, we will not have identified the regular expenditure. And well, if you get a different perspective, we'll only be too happy to hear that. What is the state of the effectiveness of internal control, and to what extent is it able to detect? I know internal audit is just based by and large, effectively. But what is the state of affairs? We'll be able to hear from internal audit, but also the audit committee, especially in terms of the responsiveness of management to the issues that have been raised. In large measure, it is not that internal audit and audit committee might not be doing their work. It might as well be how the management responds to this finding, and or whether the report of the audit committee, do they reach the ministry? What is the level of interaction in terms of escalating this issue? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Chair, I would like to attend to your question by saying, you are saying what is the state of the effectiveness of the internal control within the department, as well, currently, or maybe even previously, because you believe that if the external auditors were not there, this 2.2 million would have not been picked up. I would like to bring to the attention
of... Or maybe in the context of the affection from the agency of the inadequateness
Chair, maybe just to talk on the 2.2 million, which is under review, without talking to the one that is on the prior year, with regards to irregular, because it happened before the timing where we had the internal audit in house. The other one happened during the time where we had the internal audit in house, that is now the double booking of the venue. I would like to bring to the attention of the house that amount was indeed actually not identified by Auditor General. However, it was registered in our register, because in terms of compliance, one of the compliance expectations is that if there is an irregular expenditure as well as an authorized, as well as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure that has been identified during the year, financial year, you need to record that in the register that is resides with the Office of the CFO. We have, however, identified that. We are the one as the department within the internal audit who has identified that, and it was then registered as such. So Auditor General was given information that was there. We had to provide them with the information. I hope I've tried to answer you, Chair, in that regard. And as the Auditor General, anyway, they had the liberty to report that because they found it on our register. And if we did not register it and they found it by themselves, it would have been another query as well. So they got it from our office. And talking to the state of the effectiveness of the internal control currently within the department, I will say, like you have said earlier on, we have appeared 2009 in front of this house, and things were really, really badly. I believe during that time, CFO, you assist me, we had three qualifications, and we have since moved. And I believe that the department is not doing that badly to where we are currently, because we have managed, the department has managed to move from the three qualifications that I had to one qualification, and up until this time around, we are having no qualification, and we are gearing to assist the department as the internal audit unit to go to the clean audit. And Chair, you might acknowledge that it does not take a day, it takes some time to get there, but we are promising that we are going to get there to that clean. Before that, 2014 would have been one, accounted as one of the departments that are under the, having the clean audit. But with the state of the effectiveness of internal controls, we are getting there, Chair. We don't want to say they are fully functioning, but we are getting there. With the new changes that also the current DG has brought into place, and we have seen changes already. I don't know if I'm answering the Chair adequately.
Thank you, Chair. The status of internal control of the department has, I think 2011, I must say, was a little bit disappointing in that we've made a good progress in 2010, first time there was an amplified subpoena, and there seemed to have been action plans that management has assured us that, you know, they will you know, take effect and change things. So there was very slight improvement in internal control environment of the department. One sense that you know, there was a little bit of loss of focus by management in that, you know, 2010 was happening, and you know, some things were not properly given oversight. The issues, you know, that you see here in the report are not insurmountable. You know, they are things that need effective leadership. We've made a comment about the department having four DGs in 5 years. You know, in the previous financial year, you had acting DG who had two other responsibilities with the department. That didn't really help. We have impressed upon the DG that you know, he needs to take strict action within finance, particularly within HR. I mean, you'll see if you go to detailed issues. That's where some of the issues, you know, crop up and build up into the report. That we said to him in the last meeting that there should be consequence management from now on. You know, there's a story, if I want to share with the committee, it's on a lighter side, about Khrushchev. You know, he was, when he left office, he gave his successor three letters, and the three letters, you know, were saying that
he put it out Khrushchev.
Yes. Yes. The three letters he gave to his successor, he said, look, when you get into trouble, open the first letter, you know, and another trouble, second letter, and then the third time, you know, the third letter. The successor was in trouble, and he opened the letter and he said, well, blame it on Khrushchev. You know, then blame on the past, blame on your predecessors, and he said, the man was useless, and that's why we have all these problems. You know, the man got off, you know, said, yeah, this man seems to know what he's doing. And second letter, another problem came, and the letter says, well, look, blame it on society. You know, then, well, Russian society needs to improve. The Soviet Union has not been well, this and that and that. You know, and then he got used to it. He got used to it that the third letter said, well, now write your own three letters. You know, I think the point I'm making here, Chair, as the audit committee chairperson, is that we are on a third letter now with financial management and HR management. You know, I think if we don't see major improvements, we need to see three letters on the table. You know, thank you.
All right. On that wisdom of Khrushchev,
Thank you. explain it or something.
The other part was the infection of the committee with the executive authority. You would know that as a committee we have an interest in terms of playing the position and the role of external audit and audit committee do need to be raised. Because if you don't have proper internal control, then everything else will not stay.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for reminding me. We do interact with the executive authority. Unfortunately, at this time, we have not had a face-to-face meeting, particularly with the minister, between the minister and myself. There was an incident where the meeting was scheduled, and unfortunately, with personal, from my side rather, you know, personal matter that I had to attend agency, you know, I had to postpone that meeting. We wrote in two letters to the minister, as it's stipulated in our charter, to report to the minister on, you know, issues of concern to us. We've done so twice. My meeting with the DG, you know, gave me confidence that he's been given the instructions to resolve, you know, those issues because they are of great concern to us. You know, we don't want to really. I mean, we made a point to the DG that the Department of Sports and Recreation is not very complicated. You know, there's no reason why in the next year or two. We cannot achieve it, and the feedback I got from the DG is that he had an instruction, the minister did read our report and you know, made himself familiar with those issues, and that corrective action, you know, some of them the DG has rather commented on in this session.
Honorable Chair, can I just correct something, please, with your permission? Partly, it's correct what was said, but it's totally wrong if it says that the portfolio sport is not complicated. You must be talking about the administrative side and finances. I submit that for your opinion, please.
Well, no, fine. In relation to this narrow aspect, not to the broader issue. DG, lastly, I see that there was a case of an employee who did business with the department, or who had a business interest. In a supply to other state institutions, not with the department. But in terms of the laws, you should have given permission there to. What has happened? What is the state of affairs? And lastly, the investigation. I know you spoke about some people who have been dismissed with that. Which investigations are ongoing? What are they about? Where are we? How soon are we likely to have them concluded? The other issue is a frustration we have. You can't have a situation where when a person has done wrong, the worst punishment he or she can get is to resign. Just resign just before the institution life. And because he or she has resigned, it's something that maybe public safety administration should be able to talk to. But in the context of this fragmented civil service, where people join sports and recreation, others join education, others join health. It's a bit of a challenge, but it's a worry for us. We get this almost on a continuous basis. It's worrisome. And it's worse. The person left and went to another department. The same government, run by the same party. I mean, just read last week of the one guy, he left one municipality, sexual harassment issues, went to another municipality, it's all awkward. Was dismissed for inflating a tent. And then he's a municipal manager in another municipality in the same country. By the same party. So I'm just saying it is a policy issue that the state or government, all of us, need to look at and say, how do we find justice? So that we don't have that. But anyway, talk to the first two issues and leave the last one.
Let me start with the second issue raised. Even in our case, the two employees who resigned, we didn't leave it at that. Once they escaped our charging and the disciplinary process, we were able to immediately report the matter to the police. So while they may have escaped formal disciplinary with the ultimate sending dismissal, we have now open the case. They will have to face the music with the police once the police and the NDPA decides whether to charge or not to charge. But we have, in the case of those two, also still included them in the list of the people who are opening cases against. On the first issue, it relates to an employee who was an employee in the ministry, who was an advisor to the minister. Who, in terms of the law, has to disclose their other interests in the form to the minister. And this was an employee who was also a board member of the SABC. So in this case, it was found that the employee did indeed declare his interest of being a member of the SABC, Audit Committee Chairperson in the SABC. The financial disclosure form was given to the minister. However, it was not lodged with HR. So the employee, after some issues, including some of them related here to, was summarily released of his duties by the minister. So it's no longer in the employ of the department.
All right, the investigation, they're all concluded. The rules are still going. How soon are they likely to be concluded?
Yes, we've got like three investigations in the pipeline right now. One of them relates to the person I indicated decided to break the storm post the Ernst & Young thing. The other two are long cases that have been, some people were suspended and they've been on suspension for a long time. Some cases are like a year old, you know, so we had with labor relations, in fact, most of the cases, I think when I came on board, there were about seven or eight cases in pipeline. And most of them that we could streamline and finalize with ease, we were able to push and finalize those. We are now left with cases. I think the problem is that one of them is on appeal, and the other is going to the labor court now. We have just finalized one of Shishi, and which waited for a long time, and it was we ultimately won the case at the labor court, or rather, his application at the labor court was dismissed. So as is now, we're waiting for these two cases, one going to the labor court and one that is on appeal to the minister. And the minister has been blind in terms of the grievance procedure. He has 31 days to make a decision and inform the party of that. So we will know in due course, but we are trying to streamline and fast track and finalize all the cases, and even employees who, like the one who has been on suspension for long, pending the finalization of the investigation, that has to be done and finished. We were also chair for Intrasec, interested in the high number of cases. We are a very small department to have so many employees under investigation and under
cases, and we are now in a situation where we are trying to improve on labor relations, because it is about the proactive things that we do in an environment to reduce the turnover, because the cases are quite costly. They are not cheap, and to prosecute and even end up in the labor court and so on, it's a costly exercise. So if the management becomes effective, we will see less and less of the cases.
All right, thank you very much. We show course we have failed from the beginning. We always struggle to find people on the attention. So, just to implement, not do something crazy, just implement the law. thank you very much. We are looking forward to the department having been ordered so that we can start focusing on bail for money, not regulatory, Dr. Ravi would like to not engage in a boxing game, but would like to have a look at the situation in boxing South Africa. Chairperson of the Boxing South Africa, Ambassador Ralph, know that we have had interaction with Boxing South Africa on a few occasions in the past. And in all instances, we have had what we consider to be genuine commitment from the leadership of Boxing South Africa and the country. Turn around what they do, but it's like we're holding a cycle. Bad enough that boxing seems to have declined in terms of popularity and education. It comes worse than when even if administration has gone down or it where it is. We want to find lasting solutions to this challenge. I'm sure that there are a number of issues that they would want to talk to, but I would allow Dr. Ravi to maybe guide us.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Jimmy, Boxing South Africa has got a unique relationship with the Department of Sport. It's the parent body and so forth, and I believe that you fund them to quite an extent. But, Chairman, on page 28 of the auditor's report, I think they're item 30. I'd like to quote from it. They say that note 21 of the financial statement indicates that Boxing South Africa incurred a net deficit of 2.7 million rand during the year ended March 2011, and as of that date, the entity's liabilities exceeded its total assets by 6,248,040 rand. These conditions, along with other matters set forth in note 21, indicate the existence of a material uncertainty that may cast significant doubt on the entity's ability to continue as a going concern. Now, Chairman, this is rather alarming, this particular note. I'd like to hear from the Chief Executive Officer or the Chairman what has been done to stop this particular, have they got any proactive plans to stop this particular, because Chair, this particular note is, I think, of tremendous concern to most of the, because it's a public body. And then Chairman, something else too. I believe that the Boxing SA owed the receiver of revenue more than half a million rand. Now, Chairman, how did this occur? I mean, I believe...
Dr. Ravi, why don't you deal with the
fact? Okay, let's go there. Thank you.
Don't cloud the issue. Boxing SA is a going concern. I think this has always been in the financial statement of Boxing South Africa for as long as I've been chairperson of this committee. So, we're not dealing with something here. Are we ever going to see an end to this uncertainty?
I'm sure after your response, Dr. Fellow, I also want to get from the department exactly what is in the pipeline, what is in the plan to change the situation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to Honorable Members of Parliament. It's quite a funny feeling to be sitting here and addressing the Members of Parliament, which I used to be part of. We really, really, first of all, should sort of be grateful for being asked to come and account for what Parliament appropriates to us through the Department of Sport. The amount of work that has gone in from the time that we were appointed to now, I'm quite comfortable that the Department also is comfortable about that, together with the AG's office, because we've been talking to the AG's office as well to approve that. You mentioned something that worried me, Chairperson. You said in the beginning you've never had good interaction with Boxing South Africa. It's something that I think we will try and improve upon so that there is that good interaction, and whenever we are asked to come and account because of the oversight role that you do as this committee, it's quite critical that you ask us and you assist us in the process. I think CEO Moffat is going to go into the going concern, but at the present moment, I'm quite comfortable that we, as the minister has said to us in his mandate as the board, that we should rejuvenate boxing as much as we can and get boxing to be played and to be seen, to be played as well by the population of South Africa. I think we've just got into that, into achieving that, because we've managed to do some few things that are going to be reported upon. But I must say that the decline in popularity is starting to pick up that kind of popularity back with this rejuvenation we've done. But I'll allow the CEO to go into this annual report, which is not a very good report. And over the years, quite rightly, you point that out, that it's not been a good report coming from BSA. I'm hoping, as the DG said, that we'll find a way of working together with the department and the other institutions to change that, hopefully, in the next 3 years. But thank you for calling us to account for what has happened. But again, we're not going to go into details as probably DG has said. We have got this annual report as the new board. It's something that we have inherited, and we take full responsibility for it. There's no way of running away from it. It's there, and we've worked from where it is and what happened and moved a little bit forward in correcting some of those things that are in the report. I must apologize for our auditor, internal audit chair, who couldn't make it, as well as the former one. As well as Dr. Peter Ngatane, the former chairperson, who serves still on the board, because we asked him to accompany us, as he would be in a better position to respond to some of the questions coming from the committee, but he couldn't make it as well. So here we are. We'll do our best.
Why, from a dripping from your opinion, why would these crucially important people not be able to make it?
Thanks, Chair. We did through the department to try to invite Mr. Nduli, who was the chairperson of the previous audit committee. Then he said it was short notice, and I think he was going to already had a commitment in Kimberley. That's how we got a chair from the chairperson, from the previous chairperson of the previous audit committee, chairperson.
And
secondly, the current chair, he had a commitment. The previous chair,
not the current
chair of the year under review.
No, I'm talking about the current chair of the audit committee.
Chairperson, we don't have an audit committee that stands now as PFA.
All right. No, it's fine.
Okay.
Come to that. The previous chairperson of the board, Dr. Tan, why was he not able to be here?
We had actually written to Dr. Natan. I had spoken to him as well as the chair from the first, if you remember, invitation. He sort of was prepared, but then when this one came about, he said he's going overseas for something that has to do with his work, so we couldn't get hold of him.
All right. The second element is around detail. Of course, we're here, we need detail. In the absence of details, I think the entire team will not have it, but not much. So, we would not want a general thing. We would want details reported to details. And lastly, if I may check, when, by the way, was this board appointed? When did it take over the previous board?
The minister announced at the end, towards the end of August last year, that this new board will take over from the 1st of September. So we've been in operation now from the 1st of September last year.
What is the term of the board? What is the term of the board?
It's for the board, it's a 3-year term.
Let us hear the report to the health issue. What the director of internal audit in the department has said that the downward changes do not happen in a day. We certainly would not want to wait for 3 years to get things right. We would want to have things sorted out. Maybe let us talk to the going concern issue. What been done to address the issues around going concern, because going concern is itself been the elephant in the room all along. What's happening?
Thanks for this, and the honorable members of the committee, the minister, the chair, and CFO. Chair, when we got on to BFA, the issue of going concern and the report was an issue. Firstly, I would want to give a little background on the debt. There was a debt to SARS, which amounted to plus minus 8 million rand when I came in and then it was taken later. There was a debt that really had to be settled that related to HGSA as well. There were debtors as well that
KGSA, you mean Auditor
General? Auditor General of South Africa, yes, Mr. Chair. Then there were some smaller debts that related to internally the promoters at BSA, who are licensees of course, South Africa. And this has been the first one. Chair, when you came in, I started the process of talking to the department for SARS. Negotiating this debt of 8 million plus to say let us waive the interest. Actually, the actual capital sum was about 4.5 million, but with the years, interest and penalties, it skyrocketed to plus minus 8 million. We came to an agreement, Chairperson, with SARS that if we were to raise the capital sum that is needed, SARS could waive the penalties and interest. So we agreed on that, and then the Honourable Minister of Sport and Education advanced BSA with the 4.5 million rand to pay over to SARS. So it's correct to say, Jefferson, I don't have it in front of me. We do have an agreement signed between BSA and SARS to say that was the full and final settlement of that debt. And we appreciate the assistance from the Department of Sport and Education of Africa in terms of that. So the bulk of that debt now is gone, so we are zero with SARS. What is left with SARS They were just doing their own internal journal entries to give me a letter that says we don't have a diet at the BSA exactly. The second one relates to AGSA. Again, I want to indicate that with the assistance again of the Department of Sport and Recreation in Russia, we have been assisted to that effect with an amount of about 3.3 million rand, which are part of additional allocation to the SA, 1.5 of which was then paid over to ASA. So in terms of ASA as well, we have suffered that debt as well. Now, if you look at it, it was 8 million plus 1.5 million, so it dealt with 9.5 million in terms of going forward. Was it had an impact on the assets that was liabilities of BSA? Was the debts were very high with an asset base that was very small of BSA. That is why it was an issue about the going concern. Coming to the issue of promoters who own BSA owing promoters, it's an internal matter, if I can give background. A promoter is supposed to, when hosting a tournament, let's say the tournament costs R1 million.
Maybe let's go straight to the financials. You owe them,
yes.
How much are you owing them, when are you paying them, how does that get you out of
the issue? The issue, was the issue of offsetting. What we found is that promoters owe BSA and BSA owe promoters. It's an issue of not doing reconciliation by BSA in the current, in the year under review, on a monthly basis to say how much was reimbursed to a promoter, how much a promoter owed BSA. What we've done, Jefferson, is that we have done an offsetting exercise. Because one promoter appears as a creditor to BSA, the same promoter appears as a debtor to BSA. So we've done an exercise of saying, this promoter is owing BSA 550,000, BSA owes 70,000. We do an offsetting. We found that the balance is most of them are positive on the side of BSA, who is being owed by promoters. The actual figure, Chatterson, is not significant. I think it's sitting at about, plus minus, if I'm not mistaken, now, plus minus 60,000 to finalize from the Department of Finance. They are still in that process, Chatterson. I think the going concern is not that, so far as that. And I think with that assistance from the department, we have been able to get BSA into a positive mode. That is going to be clearly indicated when it's being audited now.
Chair, thank you, Harp. With due respect to the Chief Executive Officer, Boxing South Africa is a public body chair. And I think, with due respect, I think that we'd like to get a detailed report regarding how much the creditors and the debtors are owing them. Because I think this is of profound importance, because some other public bodies, you shouldn't favor one body or public entity at the expense of others. And I think boxing, as you said here, is a very popular sport. It's a pastime. In fact, it's a way of life. But, Chairman, there is something else which I think is important. On page 28 of the Auditor General's report, they mention that there are a number of lawsuits which is also busy being carried on. There's a premises lawsuit. There's a marketing agent lawsuit, and there's a legal fees lawsuit. Is it possible to furnish the committee with a tentative or a cost estimate what these particular legal fees will cost us in South Africa? Because this might also cripple the entity as an organization, Chairman. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, the issue of lawsuits, it's something that is also historic that we are following up after we came on board BSA. Let me start with the premises lawsuit. The previous CEO of Boxing South Africa got into an agreement with the property owner that BSA is going to go into that property and lease the property or rent the property. Now, procedurally, Section 4 of the South African Boxing Act, number 11 of 2001, says the board of BSA in consultation with the Minister of Sport and Recreation, they determine the location of the head office of Boxing South Africa. Now, in this case, Chair, there is no evidence that the CEO really followed that process of
going. Who was the CEO?
It was Mr. Bongani Kumaro, Chair. I think he resigned in 2007. So it's a case that dates back as far as that, Chair. Now, this case has been dragging, but one would say it also qualifies for the prescription in terms of the Prescription Act. But close to the period of prescribing, they would send a letter to the SA to say the matter is still going. The matter is still going. But in effect, Shepherdson, we have called the lawyer, that is as of 2 weeks ago, to say they must come before the board to give the background of the case to the new board. And then begin to say these are the costs that are involved so that we can quantify us. Our problem is that we don't have a sense of how much has been billed to BSA over the years since 2007, Shepherdson. But I think in the main, Shepherdson, when the board sat with the previous chairperson of the board, Dr. Madani, to ask, do you have knowledge of this case? Dr. Madana, the previous chair, said no, the CEO never came to us as the board of Boxing South Africa to seek permission to get into that agreement. Henceforth, that I'm saying, therefore the board, and not the board, the board of BSA, can never be held liable for such an unilateral action. That is what we are seeking to brief the lawyers who are currently handling that case. That's why I don't have finality on the matter, Chair. Let me go to the second, to the second chair.
Yeah, sure.
The premises, the other one was the legal notice. Sorry, it was a sponsorship kind of. The same chairperson as CEO, I think, got into an agreement with the third party that the third party is going to organize sponsorship of boxing South Africa. Now, the agreement of which I don't know how it was structured, which is also subject to what is going to be followed up. The agreement was that this person or the third party was going to be paid money on the basis of the kind of sponsorship that he brings into BSA. Subsequently, the third party failed to bring sponsorship to BSA, however, still demanded to be paid in terms of the agreement. That's the essence and nature of that case as well. That as well, Shepherdson, is in line to come to the board on the 18th of May. The board is having a board meeting on the 18th of May. So those are part of the agenda to say the property, they must come and explain to the board. The sponsorship deal, they must come and explain to the board. So in essence, Chair, they have not been paid as well because it would really be an audit finding to pay someone who has not even delivered in terms of the original agreement that was in place. So one would rather go forward to say, let's continue with the case and defend Boxing South Africa as much as we possibly can, Chairperson, until the new board takes a decision on the matter. Thanks, Chair.
The last one? It was premises and the sponsorship. Okay.
Explain that. Chair, I'd like to ask the Chief Executive Officer, when are you appointed on your business position?
Thank you.
I'd like to change. I'd like to get trade in other payables. Also, item number 7 on page 28. The auditor general said that there is no sufficient or appropriate evidence to support the amount of 324,000 rand and 26 rand included in trade and other payables. I'd like to have the, it's a pity that the chief financial officer is not accompanying us, but I'd like to have the view, can you give us the committee further clarity on the 324,026 rand? Can you enlighten us, because it's important that we get the detailed knowledge, why couldn't they account for that amount of 300,000 rand? Thank you, Chair.
I'm getting a feeling that we're dealing with an entity that seems not to have any system in place, no organization, no structure. And thus we have a lot of these things happening. I've just heard that they currently don't have an audit committee. Requirement of the law, practical people, how do you function without one? So what happens to internal audit? I suppose if I'm caught. So that's where I'm coming this way. Because Dr. Rabi can go on with all these questions, but you can see that the chairperson and the CEO just come in. All these things are, they are all too historical. There is no sense of exactly what was happening in the entity. And I want to check with the DG, because the last time we met with the Council of Africa, we stressed that the department should really come to the party and assist this entity. But it's like we're still on square one. I mean, the PO has explained the going concern issues, the help they got from the department. But from the last person who was asked, like they're going back exactly where they were. So I just want to check with the department and the ministry exactly what do we have in store, what is that is going on with this entity.
Chair, thank you. We share in the worries of the scope. Let me explain the processes we have already undertaken and what we still need to do to support BSA to be an entity beyond doubt. As was indicated by the CEO, the biggest challenge for us was what the Auditor General has raised around the going concern, and we had wanted to clarify that issue and to resolve it. And so the money that you had, that we have assisted BSA with to clear the debt, we were very specific in terms in our agreement with BSA was that they couldn't use the money for any other thing except to clear the debt and to make sure that they come to the level footing where we can reverse the negativity around the institution, because it's important even for it to function international flights here and so on. Many international promoters would not have confidence in an organization of that nature and would not pay the necessary deposits and so on. So that issue, I can say with a sense of comfort that we have dealt with. The second issue was the issue around the board itself and its functionality and so on. The minister has met with the board, clarified the mandate, indicated the activities that the board needs to engage with and what needs to be looked at, and we are confident that the board is now on a footing where semblance of good work is beginning to emerge. The other key issue for us was the issue around supporting them with the audit. In South Africa, it's a very small entity. It doesn't have the type of capacity. It's like our other entities, the South African Institute of Drug Free Sports. They are quite small. Even in terms of the size of personnel, they are quite very small. So we have taken a resolution which the minister has now approved that our internal audit function will be extended to the Oxfam South Africa internal audit affairs. And that scope has now been expanded. We have consulted with the head of internal audit and expanded the focus and function and scope in that area. We have also attempted to seek approval by the minister to have our audit committee being extended to oversee the functions of Boxing SA. But then, when the minister was a bit hesitant, we decided on a new route. We then supported BSA, who have issued an advert calling for people to apply to become members of the audit committee of BSA. That advert has gone out about 2 weeks ago now. The process is coming to finality and they will soon appoint an audit committee. What we have also done was to get a member of the internal audit committee from
our audit committee, a member thereof has been agreed to by the minister and approved and seconded to be also a member of the audit committee of BSA. In addition to this, we have now appointed five interns in various areas, including finance, auditing, and all that, which we are placing at BSA. I believe they have started right now, and we have placed them there to increase on the capacity to deal with most of the issues that were raised. These interns would be there. They are on contract, they are paid by us, but they are placed to support us in terms of the work that BSA is doing. We are also now at the level where we believe that all these interventions do not answer what then going forward, because they will still incur more expenditure, they will still incur, and how do we ensure that the revenue streams get improved to make sure that there is sustainability in these interventions. Otherwise, they will keep on coming and saying, give us 4 more million and less than. So we decided that the core issues we need to address, we must start addressing. First and foremost is the issue around negotiations on licensing issues of boxers. And we have already returned to the middle government business. We're introducing a new bill, the combat sport bill, which is on the rolls in this parliamentary cycle to be debated and passed. That bill will empower BSA and have the power to now insist on all people playing boxing or boxers to register, and they'll have to pay registration fees. And that will, in the main, improve the revenue streams for this, and we have to look at that. The other key thing was the issue around broadcasting rights. You would know that with the decline, boxing then quickly went out of the thing. Boxing went out of the TV, and subsequent to that, there was no more revenue for BSA. Now, the minister effectively engaged with SABC Sport, which we believe right now we have given them a person from our legal section who is assisting them with negotiations with the agreement with SABC. Once the agreement is finalized, it will be the major revenue stream for BSA in terms of collection of licensing rights for fighting boxing matches. And the good thing, I'm sure you may have seen, members, that recently the boxing matches began to be flattered again on TV. This is the more sustainable way in which the revenue streams could be improved for boxing not to come with a begging cap all the time. And lastly, Chair, in this regard, we have now seconded one of our senior managers. He's starting at Boxing SA at the management level. He will work with them for 3 months to address exactly the issues you are raising, to put systems into place, and to put policies and regulations and every other thing that needs to be worked. The person who has seconded in there is a lawyer by profession, and will work with them around the creation of the policies and tightening of the system, and will support the CEO with the work that needs to be done. At the end of the 3 month period, we hope that everything will now be in place and we'll have put BSA on an irreversible footing to what sustainability and to resolve permanently the issue of the going concern.
Thank you very much, Chair. We really appreciate the amount of work that and assistance that we are being given by the Department of Sport through the Minister of Sport. When we took over in September, things were quite at a haywire stage where we didn't know whether we were coming or going. But I think as the new board, we'll put together some structures of governance that will assist with the administration of BSA together with the assistance that we're getting. And it's not an easy entity, but it's a very small entity, very, very small. But the systems were not there, leadership was not there, the executive authority, which is the board, was not meeting its obligations. And we're trying to change that as a new board with the assistance from the Department of Sport.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I share your views, but I think I know it's a small entity, Boxing South Africa, but millions of South Africans watch boxing and that it's very important to them. So I agree, and I think at the moment the department is in a fair, as the chairman has said, is in a degree of disarray. But I think SCOPA has got a duty. We'd like to have a report, say, in 6 months from now, from the Department of Sport to see what have they done to rectify the present situation. Chair, I think it's important that we take note of that. Thank you, Chair.
Can I check if the issue we can bring this to an end. I think what Dr. Rabia said at the end might be a point that can pop out before we get to the
yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. It's a matter on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Only check at page 77. There's an amount of 37,919 on the HR consultant fee. And when you check as compared to what is being reported, that things are starting to improve in the Boxing South Africa entity. But this amount is relatively new. It was not there in the last financial year. I just wanted to get a clarity in terms of checking what is the relation in terms of those interns seconded to the entity to assist, or if another level of work that is being done in terms of this consulting. I don't know, Chair, if I could raise two and then just pass back. The second one is in relation to the expenditure in terms of that is page 78, in terms of contravening the supply chain management. There's also an amount of 582,004 which has incurred in 2011. Maybe if we can also get an explanation in that regard. Thank you.
Let me start with the HR consultant. The background to that, honourable member, is that PSA wanted to get people to go to be trained on a system called K-Square. They went to be trained, I think, two people within PSA. They went for training, and when they came back from training, the system was not in place. So you had people who've been trained, when they came back, the system was not in place, and the system was supposed to be provided by the very same company that was training them. That's the background. Now, it continued to drag on. They do have now a consultant, an HR consultant, who would come in close to each end of the month to do their payroll, and then hand it over to them, and then they get paid. The staff. That is the HR consultant who normally comes in. She has been paid something like 2,500 per month for HR related duties.
How much can you keep that
month? 2,500 per month. Yes, to do the HR work right up to payroll and then it over to.
Now, just talk to this figure of 90,000.
Yes. Here, Jefferson, there is a system that has not been bought. There is a figure that has been paid to get the two people trained on the system. There is a continuing figure of paying a consultant for the month going forward, what people have been trained. So that is the entire background to the story.
Do you still have this consultant coming every month to your payroll?
What we've done, Chairperson, is to ask the board to approve now the system to be purchased. The board has agreed that we purchased the system. The system has been purchased now. We are getting the two people who were trained to familiarize themselves with the system.
To be trained?
No, Chairperson.
Familiarize themselves with the system. To
be
trained about
the new system. This is what is happening, Chair. The financial, the HR consultant, has been handling the payroll issue coming.
Until now?
Until now, yes. The two people that were trained, one of them last year, end of last year, resigned out of the two that were trained. Now we're left with one person who is at finance, the other one is HR. So the one who resigned is from HR. So we've got one person from finance now who remains. That's the gap that we have now, Charlie. What we said is that the HR consultant must do this thing for 1 month, and then the staff of the SA take it forward. The only thing that we mentioned, the system, we do have a system now currently. So that is the period that is going to be over like 1 or 2 months. Then
what is doing payroll? I think I've heard this a couple of times of late. What is doing payroll? What do they do?
Doing payroll, yeah. Chairperson, yes, I understand from this.
No, as a general concept.
Oh,
yeah. What is to do payroll?
It's to begin to say a particular employee has been employed on a particular date, at a particular scale, at a particular notch, and so on, and this person must be remunerated as this. This is what the contract of the person says.
So you do that on a monthly basis?
Yes, Chairperson.
Let me give a short notice to our contact. Following up on what she said, okay.
On the issue of training people, as you say, they took people for training, but they didn't have the system. And when those people came back, the systems were not there. That's why they had to get a consultant to do the job for them. Why did you send people to go to school if you don't have systems? Because immediately they are trained, they must come back and continue with what they have been trained with. But you never did that. Why were you using consultants? And why are you still using them even now?
The system that we're talking about is a caseware system that assists...
No, that's fine. You say the company that trained these people was supposed to provide a system, and it didn't. Why did they not provide a system if that was in the contract, if that was the agreement?
It was supposed to be installed by that company. I might not really be in a position to answer as to why they did not supply that most. It as well happened before we came, Chairman. But Chair, our gathering of the situation is that people had to go to this company, be trained on that system at the house or premises of that particular company that was going to supply that system. So the training went on, and the system installation was to follow later. So there was a lag between the installation of the system and the training. That's where my gathering goes, Chairman.
Thanks, Chairperson. I thought that the initial approach that you described intend to risk the situation.
But it looks like we are now going back to where you were, not trying to bring a solution to the challenge confronting us of late. All of them were not anywhere in the process of this before. Hence you were saying department should then jump in and tell us what happened, and they have said a lot of things. But now the question that I wanted to get from the department, the proposed legislation that are talking about, does it intend to repeal the existing both in South Africa, or is it an augmentment of, you know, both in South Africa? If it doesn't repeal both in South Africa, looking at the liability of both in South Africa, which exists the current assets by far, you know, amount of money you are talking about, how do we convince the South Africans that it is important as intended to sustain both in South Africa with this kind of, you know, I'm a bit worried because you have said when you open this debate on the to say in the previous 2-3 years was been sitting talking about Bosnia, and it seems like nothing is happening to get the Bosnian South Africa right. What guarantee, despite what Dr. Rahi said, to say maybe in the next 6 months we should be appraised as to where are they, what are the things that they are doing different from where we are. I wanted the Deputy Minister in his closing remarks to talk to this particular issue. How do we guarantee that Boxing South Africa will not be the same when we sit next year? Because sitting here and looking at a scenario where you are saying the liability exceeds, exceeds the something that is worrying all of us. How do we then sustain it in that regard? Why do we, why don't we consider alternatives in bringing, the bookstore in South Africa into par with what we have, without, having a structure like books in South Africa? That does not seem to find, the founding reasons why that thing, existed. I'm a bit worried. I wanted to know, why do we want to continue sustaining folks in South Africa in the light of continuation of what we have seen in the past 2-3 years?
Yeah, I, come back, if you can allow me, I want us to bring this engagement to an end. On the, I'll give the teaching to make up for that. And of course, the Deputy Minister. But to say from our side, how do we sustain engagement with folks in South Africa beyond here to ensure that we're able to, because in all the instances that we met, we had very fantastic commitments in terms of what was going to be done to change things around. And a lot of appreciation for the engagement that we've had, which, would have had found on the road to Damascus, kind of change. We saw things differently and we're going to do things differently. But here we are. So maybe the lacking piece, the missing piece, was our sustained interaction. We may send Koshi and Sarabi to go to boxing and say, not for a boxing match, but to no, that's fine. But I'm just saying that maybe that's why Kumbi Sarabi said, maybe let's, because there are a whole lot of things here going. But you see, we just come there to the same point. So maybe if from our side, can sustain engagement. And I'm sure that when we write our resolution, we'll try and indicate the interval of feedback that we'd like to get from. But let me give the CEO briefly.
Perhaps, I get a sense that the members don't have a copy of our help. I have sent an action plan to Parliament. We do have that. Okay.
I think the issue is not so much what you have written down. That's why I said that in our previous engagement, we had very wonderful and fantastic conversations, which have come to naught. So I hear you, and I'm sure there were copies here. Members are going to get their copies. Not that one who read them, but I think over and above that, there has to be a sustained interaction to ensure that these things that we now have put in writing are followed up by implemented and will be changed. I think that was the essence that I wanted to emphasize. Did
you? I think your summary helps a great deal, that with an entity like this, with all the red rovers and the lights flashing,
you need to put it under tutelage. So it is necessary that engagement happens on a regular basis. Even on our part, we have increased the frequency of our monitoring of BSA. And the good thing about what we said is that 80% of the work that we have said will assist to the turnaround is already done. It's not something we still intend to do. It's already actioned, and it's all there for everybody to see what we have already done there. Obviously, the devil will lie in the detail of how appropriate are those policies and to what extent is Oxfam complying with them. And I think that's the next stage which we need to engage with after a period of 3 months. But I can assure that there will be a huge shift during the audit of boxing this year. It will be seen that some of the key red areas would significantly improve by far from where we have traveled till now. Can I raise one thing which is important to our department and which we need the committee to assist us with? The issue relates to a matter that comes from two financial years backwards. It's still on our books right now. It remains on our books. We have returned to the chair explaining this. It can't go away, and the law requires us that we get condonance from the committee for us to be able to move. This matter relates to unauthorized expenditure that was reported in the annual financial statements 2 financial years ago for 704. I don't know how. When I reviewed the facts, I could not arrive at the same conclusion that it was actually unauthorized expenditure, because it was in the work plan as well as in the approved ATP of the department that this activity was to be held. And the director had the delegations within those limits, and the director went ahead and decided to implement the tournament alone, and the DG was not aware that the tournament was being held. And when the DG became aware, he said, "Who said you must go ahead?" And then she said, "It's in my approved work plan." And the DG said, "Well, I've not authorized that," and refused to sign the documentation. Ultimately, the department had to pay, and the department paid the service provider for the hosting of the tournament, which was in the approved ATP. And it looked to me upon assessment that there must have been, because on the value of the facts, it's pretty straightforward. If activities are approved and it's within the delegations of the individual concerned, and that person was delegated to approve, the DG should not have had a challenge with that. But somehow, unfortunately, yes, he's now late. We can ask him, why were you having a problem? So that matter has been carried to the last financial report. It is going to be carried into this one as well, if condolence is not given in this regard. So we are requesting the committee to note the matter and to condone, so we can remove it from our statement. Otherwise, it will keep on recurring for good.
Yes, I have received your communication. We already have the paper which to give you. I see that Mr. Trader has sent me some note but I'm sure on that stage, together with other similar such issues, we will pick an infection. I'm sure if you can remember this explanation on that stage, it will assist us in arriving at the decision. National Treasury will also be there. I don't think that should be a big challenge in arriving at the decision either way, but certainly it is in our focus. Mr. Deputy Minister?
Chairperson, thank you so much. Please allow me to really appreciate the very good work that this committee is doing. It is it's refreshing to be sometimes taken back a step or two into previous financial years. And sometimes, Honorable Chairperson, you know, in the open and transparent manner that we speak here, I remember vividly, for instance, and I just give this anecdote, the whole saga of Mr. Beku, from which he still feel there, and the whole thing that went there. So it was good to attend this meeting. Thank you so much. I think it assists us to really, on both sides, to focus going forward, ensuring that as a department, we really arrive again at that point where we were in 2005-06. We were awarded the SAIGA prize for the best financial statements, the transparent financial statements, no modifications, and so forth. So that is something that we are really striving to achieve. As far as the public entities are concerned, Honorable Chairperson, you have your problem children. And sometimes the sense of the children become the hassle of the father or the mother or the family. But I'm really convinced that we have now for the first time taken steps to ensure that we have accountability, that we have sustainability going forward, and that we will not have to recapitalize again a public entity. I think we've reached a point where we, as the parents, step in to say we persist. It's the first time that I think the Sankas Committee is told that the departmental people see with us a contact to assist to ensure that we have systems in place. So I'm looking forward to being back in 6 months' time to report on the progress that we've made, because surely from our side we would not like to be confronted with a position where we are head faced once again on a very popular sport. Perhaps, Chair, you will afford me to just say it is perhaps on the one side good to have a previous minister introduce the very bill to Parliament, being administered by the very bill introduced and defended vigorously in the House. So it will assist us, and I'm sharing this because it's truth, in going forward with the combat sports field. Because there's Olympic-style boxing, which is something totally different to the Sanabu other than professional boxing. And the combat sports will is not going to speak only, honorable member, to boxing. It's going to speak to kickboxing, to karate, katata, karate, kufu, taekwondo. You know, there are a lot of combat activities in sport. So it seeks to galvanize and to regulate that particular aspect. So, from that perspective, it's good to also have the advantage of the wisdom of a board experience to feed into the bill as it goes forward, to say, if we address this, we will unlock that bottleneck. Chair, I don't want to take the time off of this August committee. Safe to say, thank you so much. Thank you for the spirit in which we were able to exchange ideas. We've taken note of everything, and I really am looking forward to that in 6 months' time with a glowing report, and hopefully to give, a fire on the chair to say, these are all the things we've done in boxing, policies in place, this is where we move forward. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and the Director General of the Department, as well as the Chairperson of Boxing South Africa and the CEO. I think the one element that was lacking all along has been our interaction. Like from our side, I don't know what the Postal Committee is doing, at least from our side as a committee, we certainly would want beyond today to sustain interaction, to follow up on a whole list of things. Maybe I should have looked to my right, but being a left wing, I always look to my left. Should have allowed the Auditor General just to check with them in terms of their own level of
reflection in the direction that you can take before you can join the floor.
Thank you, Chair. We from the AG are encouraged by the improvements that are currently being promised for taking place at the Boxing SA specifically, and also the assistance that the department is giving to Boxing SA. We are, however, concerned about the financial side of it. In our previous findings, there have been many findings due to lack of documentation and lack of proper accounting system or application of proper accounting system. And in the improvements that have been discussed, I haven't heard much about the appointment of this CFO, for example, or what is being done in that direction. We would urge the department and also to look at this direction.
No, like I was saying, our interaction will be focusing on financial management issues, not on the broader aspect. DG, we would like to thank you very much. We hope you stay in the department. I think that's important. We appreciate the work that you're doing.
Chair, my point of order, he accepted the contract appointment for 5 years. It's open in his first year, so humanly speaking, we're not mad out.
Well, we still want to say our say. We hope you stay and continue with the good work that you're doing. We don't want one step forward, two steps back. I think somebody spoke about that. One continuous forward movement. And I think, well, insofar as Boxing SA is concerned, we really would want to keep in touch. I'll check with the AG's office and say, give me the checklist. So I'll come there with the red pen and tick continuously to make sure that at least the framework is there and then the facts are in the shortest possible time. Probably, thank you very much for this opportunity. I have pleasure in the ages, always. Sometimes they listen to me, just sit and listen, but you never know. They are true, might bring up something that requires you. Always, thank you. We shall just in case. Thank you very much.